you know when you hear the mellow tones of the... yeah, I almost said the Dave Clark 5. I don't know why I said that. Dave Brubeck. And Take 5. That it's time for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Jay Barrett. I have with me guys who write about sports all day, every day. Joey Klecka and Jeff Helminiak. How you guys doing today, man?
Doing great.
Yeah? Yeah, that was a pretty quick answer, man. I didn't have to think about that at all.
I'm doing good, too. Yeah. And I'd like to point out we write about sports all night as well.
That's true. Actually, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't miss the late nights of that kind of journalism. The kind of journalism where you have to work at night. yeah, you know, getting up early in the morning is kind of a pain in the butt, being a morning announcer. But it beats having to sit through school board meetings, be honest.
Tough trade-off there.
Yeah, I have to go to bed at 9:30, but I don't have to listen to a school board meeting. No offense to the school board people out there and fans of school board policy making everywhere. But, you know, we're going to talk about school stuff because sports, right? That's yeah. a big thing. You know, we're going to talk about, like, the athletics and stuff, but did you hear Jenny's story this morning or yesterday about budget cuts? They're cutting a bunch of money for sport travel this year.
I didn't think there was much more to cut.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, that kind of be like your head, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you think you know, they say the athletes, student athletes. I imagine other extracurricular participants are going to have to start doing more fundraising, more bake sales, more.
More.
Yeah. What do they do
more
anymore?
Sales?
Yeah.
Bake sales, candle sales.
They sell candles.
I remember my sister selling candles when they were in high school sports. So
we sold light bulbs.
You did?
Yeah. It was the weirdest thing.
People
I don't
can't
know.
Go out and specialty light bulbs?
No, they were like 60-watt light bulbs.
Just regular light bulbs?
Yeah, and I don't know why. It's the weirdest thing.
Just hoping new people open the door and like, oh, I knew I forgot something at the store the other day.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here.
And this is in Dillingham.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
You know, you're always close to a store.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, well, you know what? Is there much more to cut? I mean, you know, it's kind of a funny, cynical comment that us journalists always like to make. But, you know, at what point will athletes have to stop traveling? Or
I mean, one thing about this community is it's really great as far as supporting the kids, supporting athletics, because they see a great value in it. So I don't see a point where athletes have to stop traveling. An interesting conversation I did have with a longtime coach this weekend. He was talking about how back in the old days, the glory days, the kids would get off the bus on road trips and they'd just hand them money. You know, hand them like $5 for meals and stuff like that. Whenever a team would make state, there was a special fund that the school district had, so the team didn't have to worry about raising money, the thousands of dollars it could cost to stay in a hotel in Anchorage. So, you know, if you look at it, it's come from there to here to even worse, and the community has stepped up. So I'd imagine it will continue to step up, but I think one area where it can impact athletics is in the load it puts on coaches. You know, this coach was saying it, you know, back in the day, we were able to coach and to continue coaching. Like, you used to see these tenures of 15 to 20 years because it wasn't a year-round thing. You know, you could just go in the season. You wouldn't have to worry about fundraising in the summer, worrying about fundraising the rest of the year, because you could just go in the season and you knew you were getting that per diem for the students. And you knew you didn't have to worry about making state and, like, blowing your budget. But now, you know, coaching is a year-round thing. And as we know, coaches do not make hardly any money. Their stipends are pretty paltry. So, you know, I think we see less of the coaches with the 15 to 20-year tenure. And, I mean, I think when a coach is able to stay in a program for a really long time, I think that's when they develop a really great program. So I think that's kind of an unseen impact of having to have coaches raise more money for travel, you know?
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts, Joey?
No, it's pretty much the way.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with what, yeah.
You know, then you have these politicians, you know, I was talking with one prominent local politician, and he was saying during the legislative session, you know, they didn't want to do too much to raise more revenue. You know, they didn't want to talk about an income tax during the legislative session because the price of oil was going back up during the session, and it is. But he didn't want to overheat the Alaska economy, despite the fact that it's been frigid for, I don't know, 15, 20, you know, since 1989, I think. And, you know, you have these schools that have these budgets that are just, you know, they're shaving all the time. And it's things like this that get shaved. And I think, I imagine you agree, and a lot of people agree that, as you said, they support sports a lot. But, you know, I think a lot of the, official talk in Juneau is, and here I am being a cynical reporter, a lot of talk in Juneau about supporting our students is lip service. You know, they use school funding as political football. And what happens is school funding is never adequate, and things like sports and extracurricular activities like music and art, which is practically zeroed out now, suffer.
Obviously you've said a lot there. I mean, the one thing I would, I would credit the community, I think, for realizing the value of sports. I think sports are kind of written off as kind of something that are not important, but I think it's extremely important that, that students learn the value of sports and learn the value of being active, and also learn all the lessons that sports have to give. I mean, I've seen so many people take the lessons that they've learned in sports or being on a team and do important and good things in their lives. But I think it's just easy to look at sports as just something that's not important just because, oh, you're just out there playing. But I think if you learn the value of being active, I mean, look at our healthcare situation, look at the problems with obesity in this country. You know, if the way you ultimately don't get obese is that you learn to enjoy activity, you learn to play, you know, like sitting on a treadmill in a gym isn't very fun. But if you learn to love like running in the mountains, or you learn to love playing rec league basketball, then all of a sudden, you know, you're active, and you know, you're able to keep your weight down a lot better. But people tend to be hesitant to connect those two things for some reason.
I think there's something to be said for sports and academics as well. You know, it seems like the best athletes are also the best scholars. They have the high GPAs. And I, you know, I'm not exactly what it is, but I think those two are definitely interconnected. I think just being around other, you know, when you're not by yourself, when you're around other, other peers and communicating and having discussions, I think it just kind of, being involved in sports, I think also, like Jeff said, like, you know, being a part of the team, it's kind of, brings about a motivation maybe that you wouldn't have had. And so it tends to lead to, you know, having good grades in the classroom as well. I mean, like I said, it seems like my sisters are, I always point to my own family, my sisters, as being like the scholars of the, the family. They did, you know, they were very involved in soccer, and running and skiing throughout the year. So, that's just, you know, two examples out of many. So,
did you guys play high school sports?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah? What'd you do?
I played. I did some baseball. I did some tennis, but my main thing was soccer.
Oh, all right. What about you?
Yes. I always had three a year: running in the fall, ski in the winter, and then track in the spring. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
You weren't a basketball player?
No.
Baseball player?
No. I mean, I did, as a child, I did those, like, I did Little League and, you know, the whatever the equivalent of basketball is.
Yeah, it just looks like, you look like a baseball player.
Yeah.
You know,
I
just.
I wish I, well, I look back, I do kind of regret, I wish I was, I wish I would have tried, well, soccer is one sport I wish I would have tried in high school. And then, yeah, baseball is another.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We only had basketball and wrestling in Dillingham. That was wait, we had cross country. We had cross country.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah. And that's it.
Well,
yeah, that was it.
Whatever brings the wherever, you know, draws the interest.
Yeah.
Probably didn't have enough for a football team.
No, and there was nobody to play.
Yeah.
you know, and that's another thing. You could take eight people on a 207 to Naknek or to Bethel to play, plus a coach, you know, to play basketball, but you can't take 22 people, you know, 80 miles by plane or 200 miles by plane, you know, to Nome or Kotzebue, which was Region 1 back then, or, you know, to play football. Barrow is an interesting...
A football town?
Yeah, interesting football town, because they pay for everybody to come up there, of course,
yeah.
Which is how they manage that. Yeah. Of course, they have all the money.
Yeah.
So, but they're doing really well, aren't they?
They're the champs. they won the state championship last year.
Yeah,
I could tell you all about that game because I covered it. It was against Homer.
Oh yeah,
one of our schools, Peninsula schools.
Yeah.
It was Homer and Barrow last fall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it came down to the last second of the game. It was a goal line stand that Barrow had, and Homer didn't have a timeout to use, and they were on like the 1 yard line. Couldn't punch it in.
Man.
It was heartbreaking for Homer, and just a thrilling finish to the game. Just like the one we had last week with Soldotna. I can tell you about that one too.
Yeah, let's transition into that. I listened to some of that on the radio, and man, the emotion, it kind of started out slow, you know, but then the emotion just built.
Yeah.
In that game as I was listening to it, and but yeah, it was just crazy. What was your experience there?
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I mean, you're right. It was.
Well, let's tell everybody. Set it up first. It was the Soldotna Stars looking for their 60th win.
Yep.
In a row.
Yep.
And it's against the West High
Eagles. So yeah, Soldotna was looking for their. They had won 59 straight, dating back to fall of 2012. So we're talking about a 6-year win streak here, and. The West Eagles are every year are perennially one of the top schools in the state, one of the top teams in the state. They've been to the Division One. There's three divisions in the state, and they've been to the Division One state championship game at least the last 3 years. I believe they won it 2 years. They won it 3 years ago, and then the last 2 years they finished second. And they've also started their season with Soldotna for the last 2 years. So this was the third year in a row where that they've opened their season with Soldotna, and Sohi's beat them the last 2 years. And this time it came down to, it was similar to last year's game, which was held at West, in which, you know, last year it was the two teams were separated just by a touchdown heading into the fourth quarter before Soldotna finally pulled away in the end. But this year it was the same deal. Sohi was no one scored until late in the first half. It was, I believe, 6-0 at half. Sohi, and then West had a nice drive to open to their first possession of the second half, and then they tied it up. And no one was really. Soldotna was. They just, if I'm going to be completely honest, they kind of shot. And this is something that their head coach Galen Brantley said was they kind of shot themselves in the foot. They made a lot of mistakes, turnovers. You always had the sense that they're going to pull it off in the end once again. And, it came down to the end there, and Soldotna was driving it down to, you know, and they're driving into West territory, down to the West 7-yard line. It was like just over 3 minutes ago. And I'm covering this thinking, all right, here we go. This is it. You know, they're going to score here. And they were up by one at that time. It was 13-12 was the score. And I'm thinking, this is it. They're going to score and pretty much ice this game and you know, win again. But they had another turnover deep in West territory, and West gets the ball. And then even then I was thinking, you know, okay, so West got the ball at their own 7. They're deep in their own. They're backed up. But even then I'm thinking they're not going to, you know, they can't move down the field and you know, the Sohi defense is going to come up big again. But it was just one big pass play there, about a 50-yarder that took the ball all the way down the other side of the field. And then at that point, it's like a minute to go, I'm thinking, oh, wow, this is getting intense. You know, here we go. Let's see what happens. And, yeah, it came down. It took all four downs. They got to fourth down. The ball was on the 1 foot line. It was 2.8 seconds left. And I'm thinking, and I'm just sitting on the sideline like, oh my God, like what's going to happen? Like this is it. Like the streak is on the line right here, this moment. Mm-hmm. And, it was crazy. Unfortunately for Salatina, it was a quarterback sneak right through the middle and they got it. And, a walk-off touchdown basically to end the game. And West brought a bit of a crowd on, and their sideline went crazy, and Saladna was sitting there stunned.
Yeah, I was listening on the radio. Like I said, I was surprised at how much cheering was going on. It's like, wow, they travel well.
Yeah.
But for a game like that, you figure.
Saladna certainly had a hearty crowd themselves. I mean, crowd. The stands were swollen. So,
do you get the school district's phone app? You ever look at that?
I know what you're talking about. I haven't used it.
If you go there and you look at the sports section, they link to all the schools and sports. Yeah. There are literally 600 photographs of that game that people, and it's not that the wow. district is linking them. It's that they tags, you know, there's like anything tagged with that game show up in this list. There are 600 photographs on that game there.
Are these like a Facebook?
Yeah, they're okay. For Facebook photos that got linked there.
Right, yeah. No, there was a lot of people. Yeah, I'm sure there was a lot of media there.
Yeah, just all over.
Cool. What a crazy way to end it. And then, so, go on.
Oh, I was going to bring up the poll, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, me too.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah, and then Saldana disappears from the poll completely.
They come into the preseason ranked number one.
As you might imagine.
They have, for some reason, the poll, there's only two polls. They got Division I poll, ranks the top Division I teams in the state. And then the divisions 2 and 3 are combined for a second poll, which I don't know why you combine divisions 2 and 3 together. I imagine just because a lot of those far out schools like Barrow, no one really knows what they have. Maybe they're just going by scores. So like you said, Saldana comes in the preseason ranked number one, and they lose to West, a Division I school, on the last play of the game. And suddenly they're out of the top five. They're dropped out of the top five this week. Well, just a couple days ago, I was looking on social media. They're taking a lot of heat. The poll people were at ASBN was taking a lot of heat. People were like, where's Saldana? You got like Eielson ranked up there, which Eielson's a great program, no doubt. But for a Division III school,
yeah,
they're not going to be ahead of Saldana, right?
No, I can't remember whose Twitter it was, but I made a comment on there. I figured there was a lot of schadenfreude in the voting, you know?
Yeah.
Or Farfugnugen. I'm not really sure
which
it was. Driving excitement or joy at their demise.
Everyone's wondering who does these polls, you know?
Yeah, I made a point of writing, I am not a voter.
Yeah.
Are you a voter?
No, I'm not.
No? Oh,
I should be.
Yeah.
I'd still put Sohi number one. I mean, they lost one game.
Yeah.
So be it.
Yeah. I think that Clarkson's a voter.
From Kodiak?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's been around a long time.
Yeah. Aren't you a voter, Jeff?
Not a voter. If I was, I wouldn't even admit it.
That's wise. So, do you have thoughts on the game? Did you listen? Did you watch? Did you talk to anybody?
I actually listened to as much as I could, and then I was working on another story. I was on a phone call when everything went down at the end. But the streak is like a big deal. I mean, I just continue to be impressed by that program, and I think it ties in with something that we were talking about earlier. I mean, as far as sports being tied to academics. I think a lot of people have the impression that a lot of athletics happen because, like, you just get these natural, talented athletes, right? Like, it's just all natural. That streak has happened. You know, the Saldana athletes are talented. But it hasn't come because like they've sent a string of players to Division I football. You know, it's happened because Coach Galen Brantley instills a lot of passion in his players. That's seen by how much they work in the off season. Particularly, they get a massive participation at their summer program. So like that's the first piece, right? Passion. You know, if you're going to be good at something, whether it's mathematics, calculus, physics, you have to be passionate about it. Same thing with sports. And then Galen Brantley and his coaching staff does a really good job of knowing what he wants to see, knowing the techniques he wants to see, and being able to break those down into nice chunks and to explain them to the players. So, you know, that's why they're able to be so good. That's why they're able to beat these Wests and Easts of the world that have these, you know, what you'd call better athletes, like bigger, stronger players, right? But that just doesn't matter in sports. Like, if you're going to be good at math, you have to be able to take chunks of information and string them all together. If you're going to be good in physics, if you're going to be a good writer, you have to be able to do all these things. So I think, again, so many people look at academics and athletics as separate, but really what you're doing is, you know, you're uploading all these things into the brain, whether it's blocking formations or whether it's like, you know, quadratic equations. And you have to be passionate about it. You have to have someone to show you how to do it. And you have to deliberately practice these things. So, you know, these players aren't just learning about, you know, how to, you know, defend a certain formation in football. They're learning certain traits that they'll use to be successful throughout their lives.
I think that's true. Just want to point out, Cubs and the Brewers are starting right about now.
Yeah, first pitch.
Junior Guerra against Kyle Hendricks.
Oh, yeah? Oh, okay.
Professor.
Yeah. His ERA is over 4 this year, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know.
It doesn't matter. He's got tenure.
First inning home runs. Yeah. You know, one thing I think the Brantley and his coaching staff told, you know, they impressed upon their players after that game, at least I think they did, and it's something, you know, I mean, I would have if I was in his place, but, you know, those players, you know, the game ended and there was some tears, a lot of sullen faces, everyone, you know, the soldat in the crowd was disappointed, and the players, you know, I talked to, and for my story, I talked to their quarterback, Jersey Truesdale, and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, they admitted, yeah, we made a ton of mistakes. That's what ultimately lost it for us. We just made too many mistakes. You know, I think a lot of the kids on that team think, you know, they're the ones that ruined the streak, this incredible streak that they had, winning streak. I imagine some of them are thinking, you know, we're the ones that broke the streak, and we don't want, you know, no one wants to be that team that breaks the streak. But listen, I mean, it was an incredible streak, and it was never going to last forever. And that's something that, you know, Brantley had mentioned. It was never going to last forever. You know, it was going to come to an end at some point. And I think the longer it went on, the longer it built on itself, you know, the more pressure, you know, just naturally you're going to feel, you know. Like we don't want to, you don't want to break it. I mean, the more and more it goes, you don't want to feel that pressure. But I think the thing that they told the players was, don't be, you know, you should be proud of yourselves. You know, don't feel like this is, you know, it's one loss. It's the first loss since 2012. You know, don't feel disappointed or like that you gave something up. Like it was a heck of a run while it lasted. And you know, I can only imagine what the rest of this season is going to be like. I think they're going to run the tables until through October. So
yeah, you know, I mean, in some respect, you got to figure that, you know, it's got to be a relief, you know, some pressure off. You know,
that's what I was wondering. Yeah,
you don't have to perform to that level anymore. Now you could just go out and execute your game plan without worrying about having to win
to keep it up. Yeah,
I mean, win just for winning.
Yeah.
Wow.
I imagine the rest of this season is going to be a breeze.
yeah you know, I said we were gonna take phone calls. Jeff, is your brother gonna call? Did I hear that?
I mean, I think he was thinking about it, but I just don't think he'd have anything to add to this particular conversation.
Oh, well, we could start talking about the crew, the brew crew.
Packers.
Sure.
Packers.
I'll just have one more thing about Soldana. I mean, I think all those lessons that I was talking about, you know, still fit. You know, like when I heard Galen Brantley talking on the radio afterward, he said he was proud of the kids because they prepared their tails off for that game. And I don't think, I don't know, this sounds like I'm not being a true sports person, but I think sometimes we get so caught up in the wins and losses. We don't think, you know, what those kids did this summer, you know, how they've applied themselves in practice and all the lessons they've learned doing that. To me, as like a taxpaying citizen, I guess you could say, I think that's what I like these kids learning, you know. I mean, I'm not, this is probably heresy for a sports editor to say, but I'm not overly concerned, you know, with the wins and the losses. I'm concerned with them, like, learning these lifetime lessons. And I think no matter whether you stop West on that last play or not, I think they've learned some valuable lessons, some lessons that'll make them better citizens by preparing their tails off, as Galen said.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you know, that it, in itself, the preparing their tails off, that couldn't have just happened during the 2 weeks they had to officially prepare, right? I mean, you got to figure a lot of these guys are
they're there all summer.
I'm talking about the athletes. The
yeah, the athletes are there. They do stuff all summer.
Year round. Yeah. They're all year round.
They have like a weightlifting program in the summer and stuff like that. And yeah, see that's the value. I see great value in that. And the talk about the bang for your buck, I mean, the coaches, no one's getting like extra money to make that happen. You know, this is basically all free stuff, free education that the taxpayers are getting for their money. I mean, these kids are there learning things all summer, basically for free.
Wow.
Not totally for free, but, you know, the facilities, and I guess there's a stipend that coaches get paid for their football duties. But, yeah. And then, I mean, the Soldano do, like, volunteer activities and stuff around the community. They have to do the fundraising, like they have a big golf tournament and stuff like that. So I just think when we narrow things down into winners and losers, we miss a lot of the big story of what's really going on here.
Interesting. Do you talk to the movers and shakers of local sports about that? You know,
who are the movers and shakers of local sports?
Athletic directors, coaches, you know, about the ancillary, maybe not even ancillary, maybe the primary.
I mean, I would say that's one thing I really enjoy about covering sports in this community. I mean, there is some of it, but there's not this massive emphasis, this massive pressure on winning and losing. There seems to be an understanding of what I've been talking about here today, that what's really important is that kids are learning valuable lifetime lessons. I don't see a lot of this ridiculous driving to succeed at all costs that maybe you see in some other areas. So, yeah, I mean, I think you talk to a lot of coaches and athletic directors about this, and there's an understanding that's really, really what's going on, that's really the value in this. I mean,
I agree.
I get it. It sounds heretical because that's what I cover. You know, I cover wins and losses. When I did a story on Dan Marshall, the Seward coach, cross-country coach who retired after 23 years, he said, not to be insulting to me or the media, but he said, you know, like, you guys miss, like, a lot of the main stories a lot of the times. You guys are always focusing on who's winning the race. You're not focusing on maybe this kid who finished 27th and lost, like, 100 pounds to do so, you know. He's like, that to me is probably more impressive than, you know, this kid who won, or at least as impressive. But you know, the media is always focusing on who won the race. Like, we have to do that. I mean, that's our job. But at the same time, there's this recognition among coaches that we're just not trying to produce a state cross country champion. We're maybe getting this kid who, you know, was overweight or something like that, interested in running, and now he's going to run or she's going to run the rest of their lives, and that's as important as winning a state cross country title.
You know what I'd like to see? And I'd like to see more coaches and athletic directors recognize that we're not mind readers, you know, and clue us in on some of those stories. I remember one time being down at Sohi and literally standing in front of the athletic director's door with every story that the Clarion had written about their athletes taped to the door.
Yeah.
And the athletic director and the principal saying, "You guys should do more stories about our athletes." Yeah. And I'm thinking, well, sure, we should. Tell us more.
But, I mean, at the same time, I mean, we probably could find those stories if we wanted to. But, I mean, we're as limited as anyone else. I mean, like when I go to the Skyview Invitational on Saturday, I mean, I got to take pictures of that. I got to write the story. I got to go into the paper and, like, lay out four pages. I got to, like, track down football. Like, Joey will be at a football game. I mean, that's just kind of the way it goes. You know, I wouldn't have time to flesh out a story like that. But I just think it's a good thing for listeners to keep in mind that kind of all these things are happening.
Yeah, and that in the same vein as what you're saying about, you know, when we write a story about when you write your story about what happened at the Skyview Invitational, you wish you could kind of include all the the big moments that happened. Like, for example, the ones that don't get noticed, like the kid that finishes 27th, but he spent the last 2 years of his life building up to that moment, and it gets kind of lost because he finished, you know, no one sees who finished 27th. I've gotten people, you know, complaining about some of my stories, my football stories about, oh, the front line, the offensive line, those are the guys that do the work and they don't get recognized. And like, yeah, I understand they do the work, and I agree with you. And every single time I've talked to a quarterback or a running back after a game, they always credit their O-line. They say, those are the guys in the trenches, that their offensive line, you know, if it wasn't for them, you know, we wouldn't have gotten it done today. And, yeah, so, I understand, you know, but when, you know, in a game story, you're not exactly going to be leading off with, you know, or you're not really going to be focusing on the entire story or the entire game, the efforts of the offensive line, even though, yeah, we all know they're the backbone of the team and that's what gets the job done. But, you know, you're just going to be putting down who led the game, or, you know, who had the most receiving or rushing yardage and who scored four touchdowns in the game, you know?
Yeah. The thing I always wish I didn't have to do when I had so many things to do was the agate. I always bring it up every time you guys are here, but man.
But I'd say that's the reason we do it, is to at least give some recognition to everyone who was involved in the event.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's true.
You know, like everyone in the community can look and see if a certain kid is there that they know, and then they can congratulate him or her the next time they see them. So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's kind of our way of trying to be all inclusive.
Yeah. Very good.
I don't know, not for us. Egg it is tough.
Yeah. Let's see. I got a note 10 minutes ago to mention our phone number, and I have not yet. 283-8414. We're taking phone calls. If your brother is listening in
Milwaukee.
Kalamazoo. Oh,
I wish he was in Kalamazoo. I've always wanted a brother from Kalamazoo.
I've always wanted to go to Kalamazoo.
Never just been.
You haven't been to Kalamazoo?
I mean, why is this surprising?
I've been to like 90% of the cities in Alaska, and you haven't been to Kalamazoo, Michigan, where you're from?
Oh, I'm from Wisconsin.
Kalamazoo, Wisconsin? You haven't?
There's a Kalamazoo in Wisconsin.
No, I got it mixed up. Never mind.
I'm not a Tigers fan. I'm a Brewers fan.
No,
and I'm certainly not a Lions fan.
No, for a second, I thought, literally thought Kalamazoo was in Wisconsin.
Sheboygan boy.
Sheboygan. That's the funny named city I was thinking of.
Can't say it without smiling.
It's the funny name.
Oh, man. You know, I watch a lot of baseball on TV, and in between innings, they show highlights of other games and stuff. One of the highlights they like showing is the guy with the mustache in Miller Park sliding down the slide, you know? From that angle, the inside of that park looks like the Kingdome.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's just horrible. But it's a beautiful park. It's amazing. But that camera angle makes it just look horrible.
That's really just too bad.
Girders and cement and just ugliness.
They need to put decorations on their outfield wall, I guess you can call it. Like, what, doesn't Houston have the train?
The train? It
comes chugging along when they hit a home run.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? They got the train up there. And then they got the grass field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
No more telephone pole in the middle of the grass field. No, though, no, thankfully. No. But, so, 283-8414, if you would like to excoriate us about our Cubs fandom or Brewers fandom.
Complain about Sohai dropping out of the top five.
Oh, pole. Yeah. That is just
I just can't
egregious.
Get over that. I, like I said, 2 days ago or whenever it was, I looked, I saw that poll. I'm like, I think everyone's looking. What?
Hey, you got to expect it, though, right? I mean, there were all these people who was like, 59 games, screw them. I'm voting them off.
Yeah.
Maybe they're off the island.
Maybe this is like their one chance just to give other teams a little, like, you know, help. Like, hey, they're in the top five. Congrats.
Yeah. Yeah. This is your one chance.
Your 1 week, you'll be there.
Yeah. Kodiak.
You're old.
Yeah. If I were a voter, I would not have voted so high. Off the island.
But not number one.
But not number one.
What, number two?
Two, three. Yeah, two. Though, you know, you mentioned the Kodiak connection. Kodiak played them 4 years in a row for the state championship.
Yeah. Like, and was that like a decade ago?
Yeah. And, man.
I came to a realization. I saw this, I think the ADN posted on Twitter, the media, well, Division Three. Division Two football, which is, you know, the middle division that Sohai plays in with Kenai and formerly known as medium schools, formerly also known as small schools, because before there were three divisions, it was just large and small. So, but since 2002, Sohai and Kenai have won every year. They've won every year the small schools / medium schools state championships. Obviously Sohai has won the last six, Kenai has won, they had a 4 year winning streak in there. So, it's incredible. So, just those two, Kenai and Sohai have won it every year since I think 2002.
Wow.
Yeah. And then 2011 was the first year they had three divisions. So it went from being called small schools to medium schools. So
I remember 1 year, Nikiski, won it all, didn't they? Medium schools,
but when there was small. But when it was when they were in the mix with Sohai and Kenai.
Yeah.
Well, they had a and Jeff can, you know, Jeff was around, that he can talk about it, but then there's 2 years in a row Nikiski won it all. You know, they had a heck of a program, a heck of a team, some incredible athletes. From what I you know, I always hear about it, you know, from the coaches, and just how incredible that team was. They even, I think, beat Service during the regular season.
I think they year. Did, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah, they were some bruisers.
Yeah. I mean, from what I hear, obviously.
I know.
Hey, were you around then? Was this the years you were here?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was like 15, 16 years ago, maybe.
2000, 2001.
Yeah.
Those are the years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
And again, there. I mean, you've got a great coach who made that happen, Scott Anderson, who just retired as a girls basketball coach after last season. Big loss for Nikiski sports, for sure.
Do you see a lot of homegrown coaches around here?
I would say, there's homegrown coaches. Yeah. The guy who's taking over, Scott Anderson, Rustin Hitchcock, actually went to Nikiski High School, so he's an example. I mean, interestingly enough, Galen Brantley is also what you'd call a homegrown coach. He went to Soldotna. And I think a lot of what he does today, he probably got from Mark Deveni, who was the Soldotna track coach. And Galen Brantley was his first state champion in the track and field winning shot put. And Devenny was also good at instilling passion and really good at watching an athlete and, you know, seeing what technique needed to be refined and being really great at explaining to that athlete how to refine that technique. And I think you see Galen Brantley's ability to do that and like how well the throwers do at Soldotna. I mean, they had a girl win the shot put title last year, Emily Pye, I think is how her name is pronounced, yeah. Pulled a massive upset over a really talented Anchorage thrower. And again, that gets back to what we're talking about. You know, he's really good at watching an athlete, at seeing what needs to be fixed, and at explaining it to that athlete. And the athlete has to be able to take that to heart and practice it. And again, that I think translates to more than sports. If you're a good learner, that's going to be good in anything, not necessarily just sports.
Have you seen much a lot of coaches using new technology with their student athletes yet, or is that something you think you're going to see with when younger coaches start coming up? You know, with the the biometrics and the things you attach to the baseball bats.
The analytics.
The analytics, yeah. Have you seen a lot of that? Video slow motion analyzing, and I don't know what else they got. They probably got sensors you can put on your running shoes. And
I mean, I see a lot of use of video. You know, like you see a ton of video being used at, you know, at track especially. I saw a lot of people like recording stuff. But in all these sports. But I sometimes think that you can get led down the wrong path with things like that. You know, I'll think about a coach who, you know, his team shoots, or his or her team shoots maybe 35% from the foul line in a particular game. And I'll be talking to the coach afterward. They'll say they got to go look at the video to see what happened. I mean, I think a lot of times you can get too caught up in video, and you can think that's, you know, an elixir because it's all new technology. But I mean, if your team's shooting 35% from the foul line, obviously that's not just a foul line problem. Obviously the mechanics, you know, there's some basics that have been lost there. So I think you can use that as an excuse. Like you can say, well, I'm trying to... you know, to show the team what's going on because of video. But, you know, if you don't know how to keep your elbow in on your jump shot, you can watch all the video you want and you're probably not going to be successful. And just to harken back to the theme of the thing, I mean, I think that's where this Soldotna program is really good. They really teach techniques, teach the basics really well. And obviously they do all the other stuff too. The coaches are incredibly prepared. They do a ton of video work. But... unless you teach the basics and teach the basics well, it doesn't make a difference. And I think that's where a lot of coaches miss the boat.
So I think the first thing your coach should do is get rid of that Shaquille O'Neal on free throw instructional video.
I think Shaquille was at least over 40%, wasn't he?
Was he?
I mean, do we got Google around here?
Good for him.
I don't know. Do you guys want to talk about like something dark and sad?
Of course.
Get a couple minutes of that in.
I mean, it's a beautiful day, so yeah. Why not?
The baggage handler at SeaTac Airport who stole that airplane and looped it and crashed it, he was a football player at Wasilla.
Wasilla, yeah. I saw that.
Yeah.
There was, a story that Frontiersman just did on that.
Yeah, Matt Tunsett was doing did a story for the, who's he work for now? Daily News?
Yeah, he's actually works for the Chugach Eagle River right. Star, which is under the aegis of the Daily News.
Yeah. But anyway, he wrote a story about that, and he said he immediately recognized the guy's name as you know, a hotshot football player, and you know, I think
some other sports too.
Yeah, and I saw comments. You know, it's like, well, you know, he was apparently like a super nice guy, and so some of the comments I read were going down the path of, well, you know, did he get his bell rung too often? Hmm. You know, did he get hit in the head too much? You know. Traumatic brain injury,
CTE. But,
yeah, you know that sent him down this path. I mean, you know, I think it's heading that way, where even somebody who played only high school athletics may wind up with traumatic brain problems in life. I don't know. I mean, there's probably no way of ever finding out with this poor guy, but, you know, kudos to him for not taking anyone else with him, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously the whole thing with you know, CTE and football, it can be extremely disturbing. I mean, especially when you get to the NFL level. I think what really needs to be developed is some type of a, you know, you can't tell if someone's got CTE until they die and until you basically cut open their brain and examine it. I think what will really solve the issue once and for all, I mean, they need to get a way of determining whether or not you have CTE while you're still living, you know, like, so that you can check and see, you know, are you getting signs of it in high school? Are you getting signs of it in college? And I've also read some things that there are certain, you know, obviously that they're doing so much gene work these days. Like there are certain genes that if you have or you don't have, it can lead to increased risk of that. So we're definitely, you know, in this world that we don't know a lot about. So at one hand, you don't want to jump to conclusions and kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. But on the other hand, I think we have to be extremely diligent in examining this problem, because obviously there's been some disturbing things that have happened with these, especially NFL players who, after they've been deceased, they've found, you know, these brains that are extremely compromised that have tons of signs of CTE. So
yeah, we should point out that a lot of these football players commit suicide, and that's how they're finding out, is, you know, they leave notes and say, hey, cut open my brain after you find my body and check,
because they're suffering and they just don't want it, they want to end it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the PBS show on the whole thing, I mean, to me, how it opened with the story about Mike Webster, that former Steelers center, who his main thing was, you know, he could snap the ball and kind of butt heads with anyone and kind of knock them off their game. I mean, the talking to the coroner who examined his body is just like, this, it was completely wrecked. Like, I could not believe the state that his body, that his brain was in. So yeah, I mean, that, like I said, it's something that no question it has to be further examined closely.
Well, I think there's ways that, like we've talked about before, as far as, like, you know, proper tackling. I know you're not going to completely prevent head injuries, but, you know, like, yeah, proper tackling and ways to not involve you know, ways to prevent concussions. And
well, the doctor whose name escapes me right now, but he was the guy Will Smith played in the movie,
yeah,
about concussions.
Yeah.
He came out here the other week talking about soccer and saying that they should probably stop headers in at least high school and lower soccer. They should probably keep kids from doing that now.
Just heading the ball?
Yeah.
Just simple acts like that. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, the big question right now, like everyone's thinking it's the big concussions that you want to avoid, and obviously you want to avoid those, but the big question is, what about, like, repetitive light contact, you know, is that causing a problem?
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, like I said, there's some scary things that are potentially happening because of this, so it must be examined closely. At the same time, there's always the danger of, like, overreacting, and you know, it, so many good things come out of sports, like we've been talking about, that you don't want to kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. So, yeah, I mean, if we find out that soccer players, you know, I think the key is that test of, you know, of a living human being. Can they make that happen? Because then you could look at soccer players, you could say, whoa, like, these guys are getting brain plaque at, like, 18 years old. This is ridiculous. We can't have them heading the ball anymore.
Brain plaque?
Like plaque in your brain. That It's almost like an Alzheimer's type thing, basically.
I've never heard of that.
It's the sheathing around the synapses, and plaque builds up around them and keeps them from firing properly.
Okay.
Apparently. I mean, that's the problem. Yeah, they say these football players have the brains of like 90-year-olds.
I wasn't questioning what you were saying. I just never heard that before. Wow.
Yeah. Floss. Always floss. Oh shoot, there's a magazine called Brain Floss, isn't there?
I use Q-tips. Does that count? No.
Yes, dig in.
Dig in. Yeah. I don't know if that's the right way to do it.
Kids, if you're listening, do not dig in. We're up 2-0.
2-0.
Rizzo.
Anthony Rizzo.
2-run homer.
My least favorite player in the world.
What?
Riz Dog, that guy's awesome.
How can you say that? He is like the nicest, most loyal. He was there when they lost 102 games. He was there.
2012. They brought him in from the Padres.
He's a cancer survivor.
He is?
Yeah.
Don't you feel terrible now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I take everything back.
Shame on you.
As long as he takes the collar the rest of the day, I take everything back.
Man, earlier this season, Javi Baez had a stare down with
MVP candidate Javi Baez.
MVP mortal lock. I offered a buddy 20-1 a $5 bet that Javi Baez is MVP this year, man. I feel it, man.
I'm not saying he's a lock because there's certainly some other guys in the National League that are having incredible seasons. But he has to be among the top candidates. He leads the league in RBI.
Yeah.
He puts on a show every night with incredible plays in the infield.
Looking
fastest
through the
hands
newspaper.
In the West.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this Acuna Jr. guy might be might have something to say about.
I think I know that headline.
Yeah, he might have something to say about who the MVP
Acuna.
Is.
And I hate to say it, but there's a certain Matt Carpenter on the Cardinals who's having a good year too.
Man,
so.
I tell you, you know,
it's
I think
got to be the salsa.
Yeah.
What is up with the Cardinals? Like, I always bury them as a Brewers fan. You know, like traumatic childhood memories, losing the '82 World Series to them. But this year, I'm like, oh, good. The Brewers are in the playoff hunt, and the Cardinals are nowhere to be seen.
All of a sudden,
they fired their manager, and then all of a sudden, you look, they're only two games behind the Brewers. They're like 9-1 in their last 10 games. I mean, they're like a nightmare. They refuse to go away.
Yeah, I have no idea. You know, they ship off
Matheny.
No, years ago. What's his name? To the Angels. And
Albert
Pujols. Yeah. Who does miserably for several years, and they keep doing fine.
Yeah. They're an incredible organization.
They got a good front office.
Yeah. They're just so well.
Yeah. And I've never counted them out this year either. I mean, at one point, you know, a couple weeks back, like, yeah, they were like 8 or 9 games back of the division lead. I'm like, you still don't count them out. I don't care.
Yeah.
You don't do it.
The one thing I think Javi Baez has against him for MVP is that he is just so exuberant. He swings at everything and anything.
He'll chase a pitch 4 feet out of the zone. Yeah.
Yeah, and he'll steal any base at any time. You know,
that's what makes him fun to watch.
It does.
He stole home in the National League Championship Series against the Dodgers. Remember that? That was a great.
And you know moment. The thing is, he's having amazing success doing all these things that you normally wouldn't do as a, a thoughtful baseball player.
No. He's young and quick. Like I said, the fastest hands in the maybe not the West, but the fastest hands in the Midwest. We'll call it since it's a Chicago team. That guy is really. I don't think if he's not part of the team this year, I don't think the Cubs are in the position. I don't think they're leading the division this year if he's not part of the team.
Oh, yeah.
His slugging, I mean, he's just been outrageous this year. And I can't believe – I'm surprised he's not in the conversation more for MVP.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where that conversation is going to or coming from, but I don't hear his name nearly as often as I should be.
Yeah. It's not like he's going against Mike Trout or something for that award, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
I think you'll start to hear his name more because I think here on this show we're often trendsetters. Like, remember Danica Patrick and Aaron Rodgers? I hadn't heard that anywhere
That's
until
right.
it was broken on this show, and now it's a thing. So right. I think you can watch out for Javi Baez and MVP talk in the future.
Man,
I'm disappointed in Danica. She grew up in Illinois. She's been a Bears fan most of her life, and now she's got her new bow.
Right.
And I've seen her on Instagram posting pictures wearing Packers gear.
Yeah, that is disappointing.
I don't care who you're dating. You got to stay loyal.
Well, I think the thing with Danica is, I mean, she was tired of not winning as a race car driver, so she wanted to actually have a chance to win as a football fan. So, of course, you're going to desert the Bears at that point and start following the Packers.
At least she's a Cubs fan and not a White Sox fan.
Yeah, so. I believe so. So
that. Quickly, what about that bottom of the ninth, two out, two strike, pinch hit, bases loaded.
David Bodie
walk-off the other night.
He is a dude.
Man, they call that the ultimate walk-off.
Yeah.
That kind of walk-off.
The ultimate walk-off. I heard it online and called it a golden home run or something like that. Yeah, it's when you're down. In fact, the last time a team was down 3-0, they were down 3-0, you know, they're getting shut out, bottom of the ninth, two outs, two strikes, you're down to the last strike of the game.
Bases loaded.
Last time that situation had occurred where a team walked it off after being down 3-0, they're getting shut out to win it with a walk-off grand slam was 1936. I just saw the stat, you know, online. It was 1936. It was the Reds against the Pirates. And I forget who the player was. But either way, yeah, David Bodie walks up there, and I was watching that game, and
yeah.
I tell you what, even when it left his bat, I'm thinking center fielder is going to come down with it, game over. But
yeah,
it wasn't until it hit the whatever that the center field wall. I was like,
yeah, the catcher knew it was gone though. I think he had an idea, but the launch angle was so steep, I didn't think it was gone either.
That was incredible. That was to me, that's the best moment of the season so far as a Cubs fan. That's just Jason Hayward had a walk off grand slam earlier in the year. That was incredible. But this was just against the Nationals, which, by the way, the Nationals lost two nights in a row. They lost on a walk-off. The next night, last night, I think it was, they lost to the Cardinals on a walk-off.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, you know, it was against Max Scherzer, who was looking for his
15th or 16th win of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was clobbering us.
Uh-huh. Well, Max Scherzer had dominated that night through seven innings, but Cole Hamels was matching him. I will say that. Cole Hamels was matching him.
He'd only given up one run before he left the game.
One hit one. In through seven innings.
Yeah.
Cole Hamels had. So it was a Scherzer's-Hamels pitching duel, and then it ended up with a walk-off grand slam and an incredible.
Yeah. My poor brother, who is an even bigger Cubs fan than I.
Wow.
Only because he's taller. And weighs more. Unbelievably. Was unfortunately working.
Lord.
But I was texting him, and he's like, damn you. Quickly, we have literally 1 minute. The beloved Seattle Mariners swept the Houston Astros in Houston. And that was pretty much just as awesome.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you gotta look at Oakland now.
Yeah, so. I know. Man, we are doing Oakland's bidding here. Man. Last words, guys. What's coming up here this weekend? You literally have 1 minute exactly between the two of you.
I'd say what I'll be covering this weekend is the Saltesha Invitational, the first big statewide cross-country meet of the year. Obviously, Saltesha is always a beautiful scene for it, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I wish I was there. I love that meet. That's a big one. I'm covering football this week, and Soldotna's looking to get back on the horse, maybe start another streak.
Who are they playing?
They're playing North Pole on Friday night.
Home or?
At home, yeah. Okay. In fact, their first half of the season, their first four games of the season are all Friday night games. But yeah, they're playing North Pole, which is a team that's given them a scare in the past. I remember 2 years ago, they almost lost North Pole in the state semifinals. And then Nikiski on Saturday is at home against Valdez. So we'll see what Nikiski has this year. I've only, you know, they lost all our peninsula teams lost, our football teams lost last week one of the season. So everyone's looking to get back on the horse.
All right. Well, gentlemen, Joey Klecka, Jeff Hilminiak.
Yeah.
The sports guys. Thanks so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Boom. Thank you, Jay. We appreciate you having us.
It is just about 11 o'clock. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.